Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Play the Game 2, Take the Shot, by Amar Shah, narrated by Sean K. Jain. Chapter 1. Pancakes and Warm Hugs.
"It's getting hot in here,"
Cake shouts, as he scampers through the newly manicured grass on the golf course. His number 33 Aaron Hardaway Orlando Magic jersey clings to his frame, already stained dark from perspiration. The morning sun casts long shadows, and Cake's book bag jostles on his back as he barely avoids getting doused by a sprinkler. I can't help but cringe as I watch his brand new Sky Hardaway kicks get dredged in dirt and mud. He's about to dash across the cart path when a giant lawn tractor zooms toward him. I rise from the swing where I bounce a basketball and point at Cake to watch out. He stares bug-eyed as the mower rumbles by him, narrowly avoiding a collision. The driver, wearing earbuds, plays an air guitar with one hand and pays no attention, as if he's finishing his solo for an unseen crowd. Cake takes a deep breath and crosses the grass, making his way past the three palm trees separating our yard from the course. Since the golf course reopened, a laundry list of accidents have occurred, from stray golf balls shattering windows to golf carts crashing into houses. Cake bends down and holds up one of those golf balls as he opens the screen door with a loud, metallic bang. I notice a big dent in it like something tried to headbutt its way through.
"Bro, I miss those cranes," Cake sighs, wiping his brow.
He's talking about the sandhill cranes that would chase him with their blade-like beaks whenever he tried to cross the lawn. His new pompadour has been destroyed, like he's just been through a car wash. "You good?" I ask. He drops his backpack, collapses into a patio chair, and slumps under the outdoor umbrella.
"It's 91 degrees outside," he says. "Even for Florida, this is kinda sus."
Our backpacks are total opposites. He's got this HoopCon bag from the summer, when we both attended, and I got totally embarrassed. I have a plain green JanSport. We've come a long way from the Paw Patrol and Space Jam bags of our elementary school days. I toss him the basketball. "Ready for our first day?" I say. "Tryouts are 2 months away."
"We're not little kids anymore," he says, dribbling the ball between his legs. "How early did you get up?"
"Like 5, I say.
"In the morning?"
he asks, all surprised. "Yep, rise and shine," I tell him. "My cousin Trina was up at 3 a.m. all summer when I stayed with her in California."
"That's bananas," Cake says.
"Trina is a true mamacita," I say. Indeed, Trina had been my summer mentor, both on and off the court. The sliding screen door screeches open, and Mom peeks her head out.
"Good morning, Cake," she says. "Did you eat breakfast?"
"Just a snack, Auntie,"
Cake replies.
"Come inside," she says. "I can make the purple pancakes you boys love."
Cake's always up for food, especially Mom's cooking. He likes it even more than I do.
"Mom, we liked them when we were 9, I complain.
"Shush,"
Cake whispers to me.
"Auntie, I would love some of your amazing pancakes."
He pretends to whisper a secret.
"Don't tell my mom,"
he says to Mom.
"But I love your food way more."
Mom blushes, and her green eyes light up like a traffic light. I roll my eyes at Cake. He shrugs and grins.
"Mom, we gotta go," I say, looking at the clock.
"Hush, you got 30 minutes. You have plenty of time."
Our bus leaves at 8:49 a.m. It's 8:20. We middle schoolers are the last to leave. The high school and elementary kids depart before the sun rises, and we get stuck with the horrid heat of August in central Florida. Cake's about to enter the house through the screen door when Dad emerges from his bedroom. He gives him the stink eye.
"Cake, you know what to do," Dad says, nodding at his dirty shoes.
"Sorry, Uncle,"
Cake says, wiping his sneakers on the mat and flinging them off. Cake knows the rules of an Indian household. Dad finds Cake equally annoying and amusing, like a character from a sitcom. He even calls him Kramer from some old show called Seinfeld. They love talking about cameras and video equipment, especially since Dad started his video production company again.
"Uncle, you have to check out the new plugin I got for Adobe. It's AI-generated. Saved me so much time in posting,"
Cake says, trying to impress Dad. Cake snags a cookie from a leftover dish and eats it. It's hilarious with Cake. He's got all the new video games, tech, and cool gizmos at his crib. And get this, his mom shops at the fancy organic food store, and they even have a chef come over twice a week. But guess what? Despite having all that epic stuff at his place, he still ends up grubbing half his meals at our house. No joke, seriously.
Mom is wearing her green pajamas. She grabs the griddle and pancake mix made of mochi and yams. She's been making us first day breakfasts since we were in third grade. It's a tradition.
Remember when you helped me make these? Mom says, as she hands me the bowl. She pinches my cheek.
Seventh grader already, she says wistfully. Now whisk, please.
I stir the bowl into a thick purple liquid like a melted grimace. Cake's already sitting at the table. Auntie, I saw one of your old shows on YouTube, he says. Mom was a Bollywood actress back in the day. She did so many shows, she can't remember. Cake is fascinated by this and keeps an IMDb of her episodes.
Really? Mom asks.
Yeah, it's on ZTV's page, all the episodes.
She must be crying in all of them, Dad jokes, pouring himself coffee.
Yeah, great for guilt-tripping you,
Mom says, winking at him. She's getting the milk from the fridge when her phone buzzes with a flurry of text messages. At first, she ignores it, but then she checks it when it continues to vibrate on the counter. She squirms when she picks it up, and once again, her green eyes swish with waves.
That's weird, she says. Three people from my dance group on WhatsApp left.
She shows Dad and us. She's biting her cheek, looking confused. Dad sips his coffee and then grabs his phone. I think it has to do with this, he says, showing her his screen. Mom takes a step back, mouth agape.
How long have you known this? She asks him.
My mom just sent it, Dad says.
And she didn't send it to me? Mom asks.
Mom grabs the batter from my hands and starts stirring it violently. Cake and I look at each other, not sure what's going on. They are talking about my grandma, Ushabha, Dad's mom.
What's going on, Dad? I ask.
He hands me his phone, and there's a flyer for a dance school called Masti Masala. I thought Mom had the only dance school in town, I say.
I thought I did too, Mom says.
Masti Masala is the Starbucks of dancing schools. It even sounds like a horrible latte drink they serve. Dina Auntie is running it, Cake says out of nowhere. Mom stares at him. My mom told me, Cake says, trying to explain.
That lady and her rich doctor husband can't even dance,
Mom says, pouring the batter onto the griddle. I look at the flyer again. Mom, I say, she isn't the instructor. It's someone named Eva Khatri.
Wait, what?
Mom says, putting down the spatula. Who's she? I ask.
She's a retired, overrated actress with zero range, Mom complains.
She's a nepo baby, but a heck of a dancer, classically trained. The pancakes begin to char and turn black. Mom turns the griddle off. She flips the pancakes onto our plates. Cake digs in. He dumps a gallon of syrup on the stack and nods like he's Winnie the Pooh indulging in honey. Auntie, these are bussin', he says.
They're burned, I say matter-of-factly.
Are yaar, I'm sorry, boys,
Mom says regretfully. I check the time. We have to go.
I can make more,
Mom offers, looking all flustered. We're good, I say, getting up. The chair makes this loud screeching noise on the floor. Cake follows me, but he still grabs another pancake, rolling it up and cramming it in his mouth. Mom wipes her face with a towel, looking super frustrated. She stares at Dad.
We need to revamp our marketing strategy, she says. I just lost three clients.
We grab our bags. We have to get to our stop.
Hold on, Rom,
Mom says, remembering something.
I forgot with all the drama, your Ushabha, who didn't tell me about this dance academy, will pick you up.
Oh, I say. Dad rolls his eyes at Mom's passive-aggressive comment.
Your dad and I have to stay late at the studio. We'll pick you up from their house after dinner.
Mom hugs me. Cake puts his hands out.
You too, Cake, she says, also hugging him.
Dad and I both stare at him awkwardly. He smiles serenely.
What? I'm like Olaf. I like warm hugs, Cake says.
See you, fellas, Dad says, slurping his coffee. I grab my ball and we head out. I'm dribbling as I close the front door. No playing ball in the house, Rom, Dad calls out. What, Dad? I say, smiling. I can't hear you. Chapter 2. Schooled. The morning simmers with heat, and the humidity wraps around me like a boa constrictor. Cake notices my gear, finally acknowledging the threads.
Dude, didn't see your shirt. Was thinking about food, he says with a grin.
I'm repping my hashtag roming jersey with a silhouette of me getting dunked on. This summer, that hashtag went viral when the number one sixth grade player in the state, Peyton Newman, posterized me at HoopCon in front of my favorite player, Aaron Hardaway. I was so humiliated when the video went everywhere, I didn't want to show my face. Only a summer trip to California for R&R, recovery and rebounding, helped me change my soundtrack. Now I kinda own it, like a badge of honor. And I'm trying to sell these jerseys.
How's the merch business?
Cake asks, half interested. It's all right, gonna add hoodies and hats soon, I reply, playing it cool. Truth is, after the first week, it's like everyone forgot about it. As much as the internet never forgets, it also doesn't remember. I'll share them on my page, promise. Swamped right now, Cake says. But he's been saying that forever. I have to get the sponsor satisfied, you know? Sure. I really don't. I dribble through my legs and watch an old dude on rollerblades whiz by us. The bus stop is at the end of our street. Last year, there was a bus driver shortage on our first day, so we waited hours until Mom picked us up and dropped us off. Hopefully, it will arrive on time today. I miss the location of our elementary school, which we could bike to, and where we'd get yelled at by the crossing guard, who always wore a Patriots cap and screamed at cars trying to make a right turn. It took me a while to adjust to bus life, especially with the Moors dominating the bus world like giant ogres. I must have lost a gallon's worth of body weight with how much I'm sweating. Hey, check out this new move, I say to Cake, showing off this cool crossover I've been practicing. Wait till Coach Demmer sees this. Going to show him my new skill set. Prove to him I can do more than shoot. Cake's fiddling with his phone, probably checking his Insta or something. Want to film the new move? I ask him. Can we post it? He looks up, squinting in the sun. Yeah, maybe. Gotta be picky with what I post. Got it. Sponsors, I say. The bus stop is already full of kids up the street. There's Winston on crutches, Dennis lugging his giant tuba, Colleen and Jenna, BFFs in their cheerleader uniforms, and the Moors taking backpacks from the sixth graders as they did to us last year. Not anymore. I want to see them try pulling that off on us now. I slam my ball on the ground to get their attention. The Moors roll their eyes, like they can't be bothered. They're wearing these ridiculous new mullets and Crocs. Who even does that? Oh, look, it's Tweedledee and Tweedledum, the Wonder Dummies. Justin, one of the Moore twins, mocks us. Smart enough to beat you two scrubs, I say. If it didn't rain, we would have crushed you. Yup, once again, by accident or an act of nature, these two goons escaped us beating them officially. We would have won easily, but Florida and Mother Nature have a funny sense of humor. The two continue to laugh. It did rain, so we still rain, Dustin says, high-fiving his brother. Get it? That's what we call a homonym. They both crack up like they made the joke of the century. Actually, it's a homophone, not a homonym, I correct them. Not that you two brainiacs would know that. They continue to snicker. Whatever, I say. We're still living rent-free in your head, bro, Dustin laughs. It's not worth conversing with these fools. Just because you won some worthless tournament, you still got posterized, Justin says. You have no chance of making the team. It'll be like last year when Coach Demmer cut you. I have to admit that stung. The memory of not seeing my name on the list last year still burns me. Coach Demmer said I needed to be a team player. He said I took too many shots. He wasn't wrong. Still, this time will be different. Dustin pops the ball out of my hand. It rolls out to the grass. The sixth graders share a laugh. Just what I need. I quickly tune them out. I manage to smile and then spot the bus rumbling down the street. The kids form an awkward line, prompting me to sprint and retrieve the ball. By the time I get back, I'm the last in line. Cake is already on the bus. The bus driver is named Gus. He grins and shows off his new dentures. When I get on, all the seats in the back are taken. Cake shrugs, motioning to the two sixth graders near him. I end up sitting next to some kid with a saxophone case. You should be in elementary school, Rom, Dustin screams from behind. Ugh, not this again. I grip my ball tighter, trying to focus on getting to school. I can't wait to play some ball before homeroom starts. Playing on the courts outside is the best part of my day. I'm ready to show off my new moves. When I turn around, I feel a rubber band graze my face. I see another and swat it away like a center passing out rejections. But it hits the kid next to me. My bad, I say, not wanting him to start crying. I stare at the Moors. The bus finally pulls into school. Credit Gus for stepping on the gas. Last year I was a nervous newbie. I got lost during the first period and ended up in the eighth grade hallway, where kids bigger than me looked like giants. That feeling is long gone. I'm at home now. I'm the first one off. Cake knows I'm heading straight to the courts. We have 15 minutes before homeroom and 7 periods of academics and electives. I'm on the Pirates team this year and stuck in the portables, not the main building. I bob and weave. Officer Runyon sees me running. Slow down, Patel, he says with a smirk, adjusting his snug police uniform. I slow my roll but must get to the court through the hallway. I break into the open and scan the horizon,
a track and football field, and basketball courts extending by four. The nets are metal chains, and the poles are minarets of hard stones. There is a prison yard element, but these morning games are ritual. Last year, the eighth graders dominated, and we watched in awe. But in the last month of classes, we got a few occasions where a court would open up. I didn't get much run and was also nervous. My crush, Rina Kapadia, laughed at me when I shot an airball. That was the last time I played here. Now I'm looking at the courts and seeing games already in action. These aren't epic Drew League or Big Three tournaments, but it's a forum to prove to ourselves and others that we can ball out. Plus, you never know if Coach Demmer is watching. Cake finally catches up to me, taking his phone and gimbal out. "Gonna grab some B-roll," he says. He didn't want my move, but he wants to capture others. The courts are full. I have my ball. The crowds start filling up. The Moors appear, and I'm ready. "Let's finish what we started," I say. We spot Beast and a few other kids for potential roster spots. Beast is always in jeans, no matter what the weather. He's also the quietest kid you'll meet until he steps onto the court and transforms into the Incredible Hulk. Dustin and I pick quickly. It's me, Cake, and Beast. The Moors bring in Derek Magnuson. The dude looks like a freshman, in college. Sure, they outsize us, but we'll play our way, fast and loose. We toss our backpacks on the lawn in heaps. I stretch. A small crowd surrounds us because three players on the school basketball team are playing. That would be the Moors and Derek. But three future stars are balling as well. That would be us. The summer has changed me. It's given me a new sense of confidence, a belief I can hold my own against anyone. I take a few practice shots, feeling the ball's familiar texture, letting it ground me in the moment. Though it's 3-on-3, we will run full court even in this heat. I point to Dustin. "We shoot for the ball," I say. I'm standing at the three-point line. I take a breath and launch. The ball swishes in. I grin. "Mount up."
"Dude," Cake says, "we can't go full court. It's too early. I'm going to be exhausted."
"Let's go," I shout. I'm ready to channel my inner Kobe, to show them all my capabilities. I grab the ball and toss it to Cake, who is heaving and sweating. I feel a twinge of guilt for pushing him, but I know he'll thank me later. This is our moment to shine, to prove ourselves. I went through the gauntlet of training this summer. Once you emerge from the grind, you won't want anything else. No other feeling matters. There's a vibe to the madness. Maybe it's the adrenaline, but I'm making an impression on this first play. I take the ball down and dish it to Cake. He passes it back. I pump fake and drive. I pull up for a jumper and bank it in. I leave my hand up in the air like a flag waving. The Moors have yet to see me ball with confidence. They got a small taste before the rain. I'm no longer going to rein it in. The crowd from the other game is coming over now. The Moors look flustered. Dustin brings up the ball. Halfway up, I press and irritate him like a hawker bugging a tourist. I wish we were in tryouts and Coach Demmer was watching. He tries to dribble around and telegraphs a pass. I slap it away. I sprint down with a clear lane for a layup. I can feel the eyes on me. I'm about to regulate freak mode. I wish I could fly. I have a clear runway for a sweet finger roll off the glass. I take two strides and I'm in the air.
"Don't choke, Rom."
I flinch. I hear a haunting, familiar voice yell out. And like a slow-motion nightmare unfurling, I spot my number one nemesis, Peyton Newman, in the corner of my eye, mocking me like he did during the summer. The guy who turned me into a meme. And now he's here, at our school. The emotional wound that had been sutured and stitched up when I was in California has just been ripped open, and I can see and hear the mocking and laughter amplify in my head. I don't even realize I'm in the air and lose complete control of the ball. It slips from my grasp, and I toss it off the backboard in what looks like the ugliest missed wide-open layup of all time. I lose my balance on the way down, scraping my knee. The ball bounces Peyton's way. His surfer cut is now a taper fade with sharp lines, like arrows, pointing at me. He picks up the ball and shoots with his backpack on. It's at least a 35-foot heave, and he swishes it. A sadistic smile crosses his face like he's the Joker. Deja vu. The visions keep coming at me like the crowd is pointing and gesturing. I got spooked. It's like I'm suffering from PTSD, and the P stands for Peyton. Everyone crowds around him like he's some magician showing off a trick. Our game is over. Cake doesn't even bother to help me up.
He runs over to Peyton like he's about to ask for his autograph. The school bell rings. Great. It's the perfect start for a new year.
Chapter 3 Motivation Mondays. I sit up, arms crossing my knees, watching 20 kids crowd around Peyton. I dust myself off. My knee hurts. I grab my basketball and gulp water from my dirty bottle, the gritty sand crunching between my teeth. The bell continues to toll, an alarm bell of anxiety. I get up and follow the rest of the students to class. Thankfully, no cameras or phones captured my botched shot. But as I meander to class, my mind spins around like a Ferris wheel, each thought making me question how much my life will change now that Peyton is at our school. The mere thought of Peyton roaming these halls, invading what was once my escape, sends a chill down my spine. Why him? Why here? I think about those theories of multiple universes. Maybe in one of them, he's not here to complicate my life. On my way, I notice a boy following me like a lost bird. He is rocking an Aaron jersey. He looks scared and clutches the shoulder straps of his bag like a life preserver. Need help? I inquire, raising an eyebrow. His eyes dart around, wide with uncertainty.
I'm trying to find my way to the manatees hallway, he murmurs, his voice barely above a whisper.
I guide him, a flicker of my own first-day nerves resurfacing as I point down the hall. Sure, go that way, and take a left.
Thanks, he says.
He hesitates and studies me, head tilting.
I saw you at HoopCon, he says. Peyton's overrated. You can take him.
His words boost my confidence. Before I can respond, he skedaddles away. I feel a karmic sense of paying it forward. I make my way to the portables and walk into homeroom. Last year, Cake and I had Mr. Banks, the computer and coding teacher. He looked like Bill Gates' long-lost brother with his 80s-style retro glasses. All we did was play Roblox and Minecraft and watch episodes of some Canadian middle school show that Drake used to star in. And this year, Cake and I are on different teams. Each grade is divided into different aquatic-based teams since our school mascot is the sea lion. Last year, Cake and I were beloved sea cows, the sweet, endangered manatee. Now I've gone rogue and a bit more anti-hero and buccaneer. I'm a pirate. Yo-hoy, yo-hoy. Cake is a dolphin. This means no classes together. It'll be our first time away. He's still in the school building, and I'm relegated to the villas, which is just a better design label for portables. Still, not being in classes together will be different. I have Ms. Rourke for both homeroom and English. Most of the portables look bare. As I approach Ms. Rourke's classroom, I notice it has a potted garden in front decorated with an assortment of flowers and plants with purple and pink colors. It's small but makes you feel welcome, unlike the other drab and fading white classrooms with rust and overgrown grass. As I sprint up the ramp, my heart pounds not just from the run, but from the uncertainty of a new year. New faces, new expectations. Inside, other students sit at desks, and around me there are posters of famous writers like Toni Morrison, Charles Dickens, Shakespeare, Langston Hughes, and more. She also has bright paper chains that hang from the wall like tinsel. Ms. Rourke smiles in front of the class. She's shuffling her papers and playing with her braids. She looks the age of my parents. I can tell she's nervous because she bounces from one leg to the next. On the whiteboard, she's written her name in graffiti font and a welcome sign for all of us. I recognize other students I know, like Stephanie Zellers, the best kickball player I've ever met. And luckily, no Peyton. The prospect of Peyton at our school hits me again. This is my worst nightmare. Part of me wants to avoid him. Part wishes for revenge, and part resents him. I take a seat. On each desk is a chocolate cookie in a bag tied with a ribbon. I put my ball down and open up the wrapper. Rena Kapadia sits right next to me. She's smiling and stunning in her blue dress. That old tingle comes back. Somehow, she's even more radiant than I remember. My thoughts drift to Allie, Trina's best friend, and how we connected this summer. But I remember Trina casually telling me last week over FaceTime that Allie thought of me like a little brother, which is the worst thing a girl could think of you as. A pencil rolls off Rena's desk and falls within my grasp. I pick it up slowly and look up. Her smile is as direct as sunlight,
and fills me like a balloon. Her hair is in French braids. My mouth drops, and so does my basketball. I stare a little too long as I hand the pencil back to her. "Hi, Rom. How was your summer?" she asks, her voice full of song. I lean back, gaining a little composure. I'm not the same guy from the temple who lost all his confidence this summer. "Good. Just chilled. I went to Cali and worked on my game," I say casually. "Oh, I'd love to go there. My Mossy lives in San Diego," she says. "What classes do you have?" I show her my schedule. We are in English and homeroom together. I hear someone scratch their throat and look up. Ms. Rourke is trying to get our attention. "Hi, everyone," she says, her voice cracking. "I'm Ms. Rourke, your homeroom teacher. I'm so excited to have you. This year, we're going to have a blast. I hope you had a fantastic summer. Homeroom is that precious time before the regular classes start, and it's a time for us to handle some administrative tasks and take attendance." She pauses, glancing at her tablet and the screen before us. "Now, let's talk about what we'll do each day during homeroom. I like to keep things exciting, so we have something special for every day of the week. First up, we have Motivation Mondays," Ms. Rourke announces, her eyes lighting up. "I'll share motivating YouTube videos or personal stories to inspire your week every Monday. Life can throw us some curveballs, but we'll tackle them together." Ms. Rourke picks up an imaginary microphone, chuckling. "True Story Tuesdays! This is the day when you become a storyteller extraordinaire. I'll share intriguing personal stories from my life and encourage you to share your experiences. We'll pass around the microphone and let our voices be heard." She can't resist breaking into song for that last bit. "And sometimes, if you're lucky, I might even serenade you with a little tune like I'm Mariah Carey." She winks. We look back at her, confused. "Or Taylor?" she says with less enthusiasm. She has even more days, including Wild Card Wednesday, Theme Park Thursday, and Freestyle Friday. "On Fridays," she says, "you'll have free time to interact with your friends, catch up on homework, or relax. It's your time to recharge before the weekend. Now let's make this Monday a motivating one. Roll the video." She puts on a clip of Kobe Bryant talking about the importance of loving what you do and being genuinely passionate about it, because then hard work feels effortless and fulfilling. I'm getting pumped up and sit up straight as the Mamba offers a lesson. I nudge Rena. "I'm finna make the team this year," I say, grinning. "That would be incredible," Rena says. "I would definitely see you play." Word. The video ends and Ms. Rourke takes attendance. As she does, she passes us our laptops for the year. "I need to tell you there will be no more lockers," she says. "If you need storage, we are doing shared spaces. Not being able to have lockers will be challenging. I won't have a place to put my ball, old snacks, or photos of Rena." The bell rings. We get up. Rena is out the door before I can say bye. First period begins. I'm heading to PE, and it dawns on me that I forgot to pack my t-shirt and shorts. I'm hoping Mom remembered to put them in my bag. As I enter the locker rooms, I breathe a temporary sigh of relief. My clothes are stuffed under my binder at the bottom of my bag. At 12, some kids already have arm and chest hair. I'm as smooth as a baby's butt. Whatever. I will stick my chest out this time, even if it is inverted. I find my assigned locker and can hear the metal clanging. I change quickly. A loud cackle reverberates behind me. I recoil, my stomach twisting into a tight knot of discomfort. I turn around and see the Moores and Peyton pointing.
"Still shook, bro?"
Peyton asks. His presence is like a dark shadow, a constant reminder of the summer. Every glance at him is a mix of dread and insecurity. I ignore them and shut my locker, but their approach still instigates. "Still got that bird chest, I see," Dustin points. "Why are you scrubs here?" I ask, surprised. "Fail PE?" "We're student assistants," they yell back. I take a deep breath. I could walk away, but I have to stand up for myself. Last year, I would have shied away from such confrontations, but this summer's challenges have sharpened me. In California, I had to deal with this guy, Henry, a YouTube influencer, but we beat him at Ballerfest. These scrubs are no different. I step up. They tower over me.
"Gonna school all three of you," I say, inverted chest pumping. "You won't even make the first cut," Peyton says. "You could try out for the Tiny Tots League."
"Bro, you're overrated," I say. We get close enough to almost butt heads, or at least my head hitting his chin. My fists clench. Cake was usually by my side. I'm alone now. I'd advise you two to step away.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?